agnostics, long-haired weirdos, short-haired weirdos, vandals, hooligans.
Love the government, hug the government, love the government, hug the government, love the government.
Welcome to the Politics Guys, a place for bipartisan, rational, and civil debate on American politics and policy. I'm Michael Baranowski, professor of political science at Northern Kentucky University. I'm joined today by my conservative counterpart, Cleveland area attorney and defender of freedom, Jay Carson.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Jay. So as usual, there was a bunch of stuff that we didn't get to because we were so focused on both the Israel-Hamas issue and the House Speaker fight, but plenty of other important things happened that I'm looking forward to talking about with you, starting with some guilty pleas. We have former Trump legal advisors Sidney Powell and Kenneth Chesbro won't be going to trial. They were both scheduled to go to trial imminently, but they both ended up pleading guilty to lesser charges, avoiding prison time, avoiding any potential significant penalties in exchange for their testimony against their 17 co-defendants, which include Donald Trump, who were indicted for violating Georgia's anti-racketeering laws in an attempt to alter that state's 2020 presidential election result. Now, Powell pleaded guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit theft by taking and five counts of conspiracy to commit intentional interference with performance of election duties. Chesbro, I want to call him Cheesebro, and I know that's not right. So
right. I always think that's when I see that thing.
But Chesbro, who has enough problems without having his name mangled, pleaded guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit filing false documents. And Powell and Chesbro are the second and third people to have pleaded guilty in the racketeering case. They joined bail bondsman Scott Hall, who was accused of conspiring to unlawfully access voter data and ballot counting machines. So we're getting, this is oftentimes how one would expect this to happen, right? Jay, you get a sprawling case with a bunch of defendants, and oftentimes the prosecution's goal is to start turning some of the lesser ones, working their way up the line. So you start with this bail bondsman who nobody's heard of, then all of a sudden you get released the Kraken Sidney Powell, who has plenty of, you know, personal connection to Donald Trump. And then after that, Kenneth Chesbro, who was also very instrumental in inner circle-ish sort of things. And so how big of a deal is this potentially, do you think?
I don't know how big of a deal. I mean, to me, I'm a little troubled, you know, by this entire case, really, and the prosecution and at this point.
Why is that? Let's talk about that, because I think that's where you and I agreed when we talked about the various cases against Trump, you and I agreed that the New York civil case was a stretch. And for me, it was this weird kind of sort of way of stretching misdemeanors, what would usually be misdemeanors and the felonies, and getting past the statute of limit. It was just, there was a lot that just made me go, oh.
Yeah. To me, this one is not as much a stretch as the New York one, but still a stretch.
Okay. And I guess I differ from you on that, because it seems to me that this is exactly, well, not exactly, but this is part of why racketeering laws were put into place, right? So that if a bunch of people are engaged in a conspiracy, you don't have to just let them get off on these minor things, because if you can demonstrate they were an important part or a part of this larger conspiracy, they should be treated as co-conspirators and not just people who did this one little thing or that one little thing. And at least if I'm understanding the theory behind that correctly, that seems to fit what the prosecution is alleging went on in Georgia.
Yeah, but I guess my trouble is if you are indicting people for giving really terrible legal advice, I think that's kind of, and part of this stems from, you know, the Cheesebro.
I shouldn't have said it. Sorry about that.
You know, writing a memo saying, well, maybe you could take this route. Now, again, it may be a really dumb idea. It may be terrible advice, but as a criminal act, no, I don't. That's what troubles me. But it's sort of like, well, if it's in pursuit of Donald Trump, then it is a criminal act. And even this the whole Georgia case, I think my problem, having read the transcript of the phone call, right? I think the comes off there is, if he really believes there's fraud and he's trying to seek to find that fraud, he can be wrong. Right. And that's not the same as criminal. If it's now, if he is, as the prosecution seems to allege, sort of asking someone to make up something, right, in order to get him the votes. Well, that's a different situation. But again, my sense is that Trump really believed there's fraud there, and that the Georgia officials just weren't looking hard enough. And that he was encouraging them to look harder. Now, those are going to be questions for the jury then eventually. But
So then when, as part of the appearance before the judge, when the judge is, as I guess is pretty standard for this, you would know better than I would.
Right. The colloquy, plea colloquy there, is what we call it.
In the colloquy, when the judge said to both in their individual cases, both Powell and Chesbro, you are saying that the facts in this case are something, I don't know the wording, but you actually are guilty, and the facts of this case would demonstrate that you are in fact guilty.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not saying that when they said that they were perjuring themselves.
No, they were cutting a deal. Yeah.
But what's the difference? I'm serious. So are you saying that they were, they decided to perjure themselves to save, to get out of prison time?
Well, I don't know whether they say perjure themselves, but they could say that they, you know, reasonably believe that that's going to be the, I think a lot of times the question is, the facts, I think the facts mostly were undisputed. It's more a matter of the law of what were they doing? Was that really a crime? So no, that's what happens in pretty much any plea agreement, right? And people take plea agreements to get a better deal, right? They kind of do the math and figure, what's the chances that someone's going to believe my version versus somebody else's version?
So do you think then that Powell and Chesbro will provide false testimony in exchange for this treatment?
No, I don't think it'll be false testimony. Again, that would be perjury.
I guess I should point out, it wouldn't be perjury. I realize, because the question I believe the judge asks is if there's a factual basis for moving forward with the charge, and not that a factual basis that clearly and
right. You're not conceding all of the facts.
Right. Okay.
Think. Yeah.
So I guess then you feel that this is all just that. Are you saying that you do not think that Donald Trump and others engaged in a conspiracy to attempt to change the election results in Georgia? Or are you saying, and this is maybe a fine distinction, but I think it's an important distinction, that not only do you think that that's not the case, but that there was not even sufficient cause to pursue an indictment on those charges? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction. Yeah, the latter.
So the latter is just saying that there's so little there that it wasn't even indictment worthy.
Well, and I think there's also the defense of there is a sort of privilege, and it's not even an executive privilege, I don't think, but to say, listen, I'm looking at my legal rights in challenging these election results.
I understand that.
You can be wrong, but that doesn't mean it's a, you know, was Al Gore conspiring to reverse the results of an election when he challenged the Florida outcome? Well, no, he was just challenging an election that he thought there were issues with.
But you're not suggesting that what Al Gore did in 2000 was essentially the same. I mean, it's the same if we want to put it under the banner of challenging. But there's challenging and there's challenging, right? I mean, there's challenging that's perfectly legal and above board. Then, for instance, there's challenging that gets into threats, that gets into illegal activity, that you could still call that challenging. And it seems to me that what Trump and his associates have done was so outside this. No, Al Gore wasn't talking about releasing the Kraken and Hugo Chavez and Venezuela and this wild, wild stuff, that to call both challenging is like saying, well, you know, I took $100. Well, I took $100 million. Well, we both took money. I think it's a false equivalence. Do you disagree?
Maybe yes or no. But to me, it's sort of where does that legal line get drawn between good challenging and bad challenging?
And I would say,
if you're able to say, well, bad challenging is criminal. Well, that's to me, that's a problem, because that's sort of a really chilling effect, right? Because what is bad challenging is going to be in the eye of the prosecutor, and that may necessarily be a partisan decision.
In the end, what is bad challenging is what is illegal challenging, and ultimately that's in the eyes of the jury, right?
Yeah.
I guess
I'm still unclear, and again, I don't have the indictment in front of me, but the illegality of what the Cheesebro, and I'm still going to keep calling him that because I like that name.
And he's Powell a cheese bro. Yeah, I like it too.
It had to do with discussing, you know, could the federal government grab the voting machines, seize them as evidence? Look, again, I think that's maybe a really bad idea. I think maybe or maybe not that's outside the power of the federal government. But I think if you're talking about, hey, what are our legal avenues to challenge? We think there's something wrong with these voting machines. Whether it makes sense or not, is there a legal avenue to do that? And someone says, well, you know, one thing maybe you could do is we could seize them as evidence. Again, is that a crime? I don't know that it is.
So when it never
happens.
Well,
you're kind of shooting around ideas, and then people say, no, that's not a good idea. Well,
as I understand it, and again, you're in a better position to comment on this, but conspiracy typically only requires that the conspirators involved agree in some way to engage in an illegal act or illegal acts, but there doesn't have to actually be that act. The very fact of engaging in doing it, even if it's not successfully carried out, that's why conspiracy is a separate crime from the crime itself. If I understand that correctly, and I'm not saying that I do, but that is my understanding of the basis of conspiracy charges in general.
Yeah.
And so,
but again, there's got to be some underlying illegal purpose.
And wouldn't changing the results of an election, I mean, be an illegal purpose?
Yeah, if you knew that let's go back to Al Gore then. What was his purpose in Florida?
I see what you're saying. I think there's an important distinction to be made between trying to change the results of an election that you believe you have lost to try to subvert the will of the people, as opposed to ensuring that the election is correctly, the votes are correctly counted. Those are two very different things, because one is saying,
and Trump contends that the votes were not correctly counted and that he actually won. And the only way he could have lost would be because of massive fraud. I think he's delusional.
But we've talked about that before. And being delusional does not absolve you. If you have no rational reason to believe in something like that, then that you can't just say, well, I'm delusional and that's my get out of jail free card. That's not how it works.
Well, I might.
I mean, as a matter of law, I'm saying that just because that's not typically the legal standard to say that, well, I don't care that everyone told me this was a crime. I did not believe it was a crime, so therefore I had no criminal intent.
I'm not saying no. In that case, if I'm not believing it's a crime, I'm saying if what you're doing is simply challenging an election, even if you're doing it honestly, right? If you honestly believe that, then I think you have a duty to challenge it. I guess that's what
I don't disagree with that.
Is you just say I don't disagree
with that, but I'm saying that if everyone, if there is no reasonable basis aside from your belief in yourself that you have won the election, and that seems to be your argument about Trump, that is not in and of itself a sufficient defense.
Again, that's a question I'd have to take a look at. I think it would be. I think it is a defense to say, look, I had reasonable belief. Now, again, that question of was the belief reasonable?
Exactly. And that's the point that I'm getting at.
Yeah, but.
And so to say, well, I'm just an unreasonable person. I don't care what anyone says. This was my belief, and my belief is my belief. And that's, I think, where we're, you know, getting into that sort of territory. But back to the practicalities of it. I mean, it seems to me that one way this works out is it's sort of a prisoner's dilemma situation, right? Is the other, well, not 17, but now there were 19, now there are 16. So 15 of them start saying to themselves, well, who's going to be the next to take a deal? And should I take a deal while there's one still on the table, while I still have some leverage? And who's going to crack next? And
I think most of them will take a deal. And it'll be interesting what they say. Now, look, if some of these folks say, hey, look, Trump said, I totally lost that election. Can't believe I even got as many votes as I did, but you know what? We're going to find a way to overturn it. You know, what do you got? Well, that's a different kind of situation, isn't it? If these folks testify, as I think they might, and say, no, the president was insistent at all times that he never lost the election.
I think it's more likely that the prosecutors wouldn't have offered them deals if they thought that they had nothing valuable to offer that kind of got to the heart of this conspiracy. And so I think it's much more likely that they would say something along the lines of, well, there was a point in time in which it seemed like the president indicated that he knew he had lost in no uncertain terms, sort of thing. And will that be enough? I think what the prosecution is hoping is that given enough inner circle Trump people saying that will be enough to convince a jury that yes, regardless of what Donald Trump says, he knew he lost and he knew what was being suggested to him was very likely illegal, but he decided he gave the order essentially to go ahead with it anyway, which that seems to me to be an awfully difficult thing to prove, I would expect, especially in a criminal case when we're talking about the necessity for a unanimous jury. So in the end, do you think Donald Trump ends up being convicted of anything here, even with these guilty pleas?
Yeah, I think he does.
Yeah. I mean, in this particular case, not just in the cases overall, because there are obviously 91 felony charges against him. So, you know, he's got to get on something eventually. Yeah. So, but you think in the Georgia case, there'll be at least something.
Yeah, I do.
And again, I
think that's going to be wrong. And I think
let me clarify on that or get some clarity on that. When you say wrong, do you mean that the jury will reach an incorrect conclusion about whether Donald Trump did criminal things or that Donald Trump did criminal things that should not have been prosecuted or somewhere in between there?
The latter. Well, more the latter, more that this should not have been prosecuted. Just out of good common sense.
We hope you enjoyed this preview of our supporters exclusive midweek show.
If you'd like to hear the rest of the episode, we hope you'll consider becoming a supporter. Supporters get ad-free access to all of our shows, membership in our Politics Guys Discord group where you can join in on the conversation, and other benefits at different levels of support. To become a supporter, go to patreon.com/politicsguys. You can also support us through Venmo, we're at Politics Guys, or through PayPal. You'll find all of our support links in the show notes as well as at politicsguys.com/support. And if you'd like to get the midweek show, but you're not in a position to become a financial supporter, that's not a problem. Just send me an email at mike@politicsguys.com, and I'll be happy to get that set up for you.